following is a presentation of Learfield IMG College. From the Georgia Southern Sports Network, powered by Learfield IMG College.
Wings up, Eagle Nation! Touchdown, Georgia Southern!
This is Inside Eagle Nation, your all-access look into Eagle athletics.
Taking a look through all the other action in Georgia Southern athletics this past week. A lot of road action. A lot of teams hitting the old I-16 out of town.
Getting on the steel horse and taking us to parts north, south, west, wherever. Can't really go too much farther east.
Now let's return to the Learfield IMG College studios. Here are your hosts, Colin Lacey and Danny Reed.
That's a fact, Jack.
Welcome into another edition of Inside Eagle Nation, your official podcast for Georgia Southern Athletics, and has been for the last 114 episodes. We've talked about it before. I didn't know that we were going to make it to episode number 2, let alone 114. But here we are, another week in Georgia Southern Athletics. Colin Lacey alongside the voice of the Eagles, Danny Reed, made your way back from South Alabama in the Mitchell Center. How is the long ride home that probably ended about 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning in Statesboro?
We pulled in just a touch after 3 o'clock on Sunday, which is about what I was expecting. We did stop once at a rest stop, and I couldn't tell you where in the southeast it was. But we all had...
probably better that way.
We all had barbecue dinners from somewhere locally, and we had one left over. So after everybody goes and gets snacks and whatever and goes and using the restrooms, there was one guy that was at the desk at this rest stop in Nowheresville Southeast, and it looked like he had been there for 4 or 5 days. And who knows how many people had stopped at this rest stop, but we had one meal left. So Reed read a Rusty Garofalo, two of the graduate GAs, took in, gave him the meal, and I thought that was a pretty nice touch by the crew.
Whenever you said barbecue sandwich, I was thinking of when we were coming back from Idaho and they handed us a pork sandwich on the way on the plane.
See, I was wondering what time we were going to get home from that trip. I didn't know if it was going to be the 10, 11 a.m. that it ended up being, but when we had to stop to refuel, the game was late that night, and we were 3 time zones away, and you started to do some more math, and then you're pulling in to the FOC parking lot, and it's lunchtime the next day, and you haven't even slept yet. That was the latest I've ever gotten back, or... you can't say the earliest, but it's definitely the latest I've ever gotten back from a trip.
That one. Between that one and when we had to drive back from Jonesboro, the one from Jonesboro almost got me. Because we were cruising right along until about 7, 8 o'clock in the morning whenever the sun started coming up, and we were in about Douglasville.
Yeah.
When the sun came up, I hit a wall. And Frank had to bring us the rest of the way.
Yeah, I guess that was about 10:30. That was that Thursday morning that we had gotten back.
Both of those felt like we got back on Thursday.
Well, we did. Game was Wednesday.
Well, okay. The next Thursday.
Well, it sucked even more because you just lost by 1 point in a review that should have gone one way but didn't, but that's 5 years ago.
Yeah, and he was still out of bounds.
Yeah, he was out of bounds.
Anyway, as always, Inside Eagle Nation is presented by our good friends at Arcola Septic. Arcola Septic is your premier septic services provider to Bullock, Bryan, and adjoining counties, and a great family-owned business that's run by a pair of Georgia Southern alumni. Make sure to give them a call at 912-318-7939 or visit them online at arcolaseptic.com. For both commercial and residential customers, their more than 10 years of experience can help you out with pumping and servicing your septic system, drain field repairs, new system installation, and all of your septic needs. Remember to follow them on Facebook, Arcola Septic, yesterday's Meals on Wheels. A lot to get to in this week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation. Start off with Georgia Southern men's golf, because when you're going to talk about Carter Collins, he's got to lead off. They start with the Thomas Sharkey Individual Collegiate on Sunday and Monday over at the Georgia Southern Golf Course. That, as always, in memory of Thomas Sharkey, former Georgia golfer that passed away a number of years ago. And if you haven't seen the video that still floats around on GSEagles.com and on YouTube, make sure you go and find it. It's where Carter Collins talks about the memory of Thomas Sharkey going over across the water to his homeland to be able to pay homage to him the next year, and it's a pretty cool story.
You can tell how much he means to the program because if you've been to the Bennett Ramsey Golf Facility, beneath the flagpole to the right of the main entrance, there's a small monument in memory of Thomas Sharkey, and it's been, I think it's been 10 years now that this has happened. And it's a small reminder, whether you're going out for a practice round or you're getting ready to go to the conference championships, it's just that small reminder that that's someone that literally gave everything to be a part of Georgia Southern Golf.
Georgia Southern Track started off their spring portion of the season at the Liberty Elite Invitational. Zakira Williams won the 60-meter hurdles with a time of 8:50. Second in school history, missed the school record by a tenth of a second. But they will take a couple of weeks off until the next meet. Georgia Southern men's tennis opens up the regular season on Saturday against North Florida at the Wallace Tennis Center. It'll be a 1 p.m. first serve against the Ospreys of North Florida. Women's tennis opened up the season this past weekend, fell 4-3 to Charleston Southern on Saturday, and then bounced back on Sunday at College of Charleston with a 5-2 win, and setting a little bit of history. The first time that women's tennis had knocked off College of Charleston in 21 years.
You know, I've come from Charleston, spent 7 years down there, and even though I didn't work terribly close with College of Charleston women's tennis, I've known that that's always been a very good program. That's a big win. That's a big win for Georgia Southern.
Huge congratulations goes out to Sean McCaffrey and the crew. Saw them, actually, before they left to go to Charleston this weekend, on Wednesday or Thursday of last week. They had to be brought inside because of rain, and for part of the conditioning, and it may have been after the conditioning, I think, but Sean McCaffrey was teaching some of his players how to shoot a free throw. And they were going through the whole thing where when the referee bounces the ball to you, you have to clap and then do the spirit fingers. It was pretty entertaining.
Did he do the basketball part for his team during Battle of the Eagle Stars?
I think he did.
Yeah. I don't know if that went very well.
Yeah, I don't think it did. I think he was part of the intro, and I'm pretty sure in something like that, if you're part of the intro, it either went really well or not very well. And I think he was on the latter end of that.
He did give one of the better memories, though. They were doing the softball event, and he was doing the pre-match interview with Megan Leib, and it lasted about 7 seconds, but those were 7 seconds of pure gold before he trudged off and tried to help his team in the softball part.
Women's tennis will be back on the courts on Saturday and Sunday this week. Saturday, they will make their way to Orangeburg, South Carolina, and take on the Bulldogs of South Carolina State. They might stop off at Dario's.
If they don't, I'm going to be really, really upset. Now I'll have to go through the drive-thru. Can't go inside. Like we had to find out when we went up there for football this year.
Yeah, be careful when you order a large ice cream. They take their large very seriously in Orangeburg, South Carolina.
See, you also went with the fried bologna.
I did.
And that was probably not the best thing to get in the middle of a car trip.
It was the best thing to get at the time. It was incredible. Because I'm telling you, there's nothing better than a fried bologna and cheese sandwich.
Oh, I forgot that you got cheese on it. I thought it was just straight fried bologna.
No.
Okay.
Yeah, that's about as good as it gets. Wait, I saw fried bologna, I can't believe I hadn't done that earlier.
Well, it's because
normally I just got a regular burger.
Well, all I do is talk about the curly burger. I don't think you've ever gotten one.
No, I don't think I have.
It's basically a poor man's version of a Big Mac, which I think it's better than the actual Big Mac, but
yeah,
that's beside the point. I didn't remember how big the ice cream was, though.
Yeah, I didn't eat, and I think they changed that, or either that or when I ordered a large ice cream in a cup, they just gave me a large cup and filled it with ice cream. I don't think the ice cream was supposed to be that big.
See, that's where you can time it up real nice, where if they're low on their cups and they can't go all the way back to change, or they haven't gotten their restocked inventory, they can say, no, we were out of the cups, we just decided to go ahead and do this one for you. Aw. Well,
yeah.
Well, thank you.
For all of you that know me, know that I'm a big fan of ice cream. I love ice cream, probably like a kid even more. That one put me to the test of how much ice cream I could consume in one sitting. I won, but it was a hard-fought battle, let's put it that way.
Well, your stomach was probably trading punches with the fried bologna and the ice cream trying to knock each other out.
Yeah, and I'm not sure who won that one, but that one I know was not me.
Coastal ultimately won, but we'll figure that one out next year.
That too. Women's tennis again in Orangeburg, South Carolina Saturday. Then they return home to host North Florida on Sunday. Rifle will have their first meet of the spring with a matchup in Statesboro against number 20 in the country in the Citadel Bulldogs. It'll be a 2 p.m. start on Sunday. Swim and Dive defeated North Florida on Saturday over at the rack, 152-128, won the 200-yard medley relay, Georgia Southern took all three medal spots in the 100-yard freestyle with Anna Marie Horniak, Abby Sopa, and Kat Neiman. They will have a week off before taking on North Florida again a week from this coming Saturday. And then Georgia Southern Volleyball had a couple of big announcements this past week. Because of the NCAA moving the championships to the spring, volleyball can play games in the spring. We've talked about it before, how the conference champion will be going to the NCAA tournament, and they can play games to almost as warm-ups to get to the championship. But volleyball will add three games to their schedule. It starts on Saturdays. They take on the Cougars of College of Charleston in Charleston, 7 p.m. the first serve. They will also host two matches the next two Tuesday evenings with Jacksonville on February the 2nd and North Florida on February the 9th. Speaking of adding games to the schedule, we had Chris Adams on East Georgia's morning show on the flagship station 94.9, the Eagle, and 106.5, the Burrow, this past Tuesday. And he was talking about women's soccer having a couple of games. And it's not necessarily designed to work this way. But in the case of Chris Adams, he's going to get almost a preview of what his team is going to look like come his first official season. They will have somewhere in the ballpark of three or four games. It hasn't officially been announced yet. But he was talking with Brian Steele and Travis Bilger over at Foundry Broadcasting about going to Florida and going to Ole Miss. And so trying to put the ladies to the test early in his tenure.
If you're going to find out, you better find out early.
That sounds like a road trip for Aaron Soko. Georgia Southern softball had the conference schedule announced yesterday. If you're listening to this on time on Tuesday,
this is a true whip around. We're catching almost everybody.
We're rocking and rolling. But yesterday on Monday, the eight conference weekends were announced. Georgia Southern a little bit off kilter as far as how even the schedule is. They will only have three weekend home series. Five will be on the road. And remember last year you had them transferring to more of what the baseball season did, in the fact that they went Friday, Saturday, and Sunday most weekends, doing it a three-day weekend. But they are going to be going back to a doubleheader on Saturday and then playing a single game on Sunday. And again, because of everything that's going around with COVID-19, trying to limit the travel and how much you're away from home, and especially in Georgia Southern's case when you got five of the eight conference weekends on the road.
They got one league series in last year. Baseball was cut off just before they could start against Troy. The women had a three-game set against ULM, taking two out of three at Eagle Field. Kind of smush that together, make it seem like you're getting half at home and half on the road, but this is one of those years where it's not going to make sense, but in the end, it'll look similar. But then when you look back and realize, 2020, COVID year. Whatever happens, it all funnels back to that.
There's always going to be asterisks and all kinds of media guides and record books for years and years to come.
Still with football playing 12 in the regular season, knock on wood, basketball has actually added a game. Basketball was plus one. And baseball is the one where if you can get anywhere close to 56, just take All-American status.
Yeah. I heard somebody talking about what the college baseball world's going to look like in 2021, and they said pretty much if you get over 45 games, you're probably sitting pretty is what people are thinking right about now.
And for most of those leagues, it is conference only where they're going four on the weekends with Friday, double dip, Sunday, or some are fortunate enough to say Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, a true four-game series on the weekend. But they are not saying midweek. They're trying to stay away from that, limit travel as much as possible. We had talked within the last couple of weeks about Georgia Tech probably not coming to Statesboro this year, but Eagles will still go to Atlanta to battle the Yellow Jackets. The game against Georgia up at SRP Park in Augusta has been called off, but you'll still have the home-and-home matchup here in Statesboro and then again in Athens. It's just part of the year. It doesn't mean it's right. It just means it's how it's going to go.
For Georgia Southern softball, the rest of the non-conference schedule is going to be coming out in the next couple of days and week. But look for a couple of home tournaments for Georgia Southern softball to open it up in 2021. Had the end of the run in the NFL playoffs for former Eagle Tyler Bass with the Buffalo Bills. Finished up in the AFC Championship game. But what a rookie season it was for Bass. Football put it out on social media earlier on yesterday. Had a franchise record as far as points are concerned. The first kicker in NFL history with 3 50-plus yard field goals in the playoffs. The 54-yard field goal, the longest by a rookie in playoff history. And I think Frank said it best, and I'm going to paraphrase it. That's a heck of a rookie season.
To think that he did that as early as he could, and we've gone over some of his numbers already when it got tough at the beginning, but then he had the breakout game against the Jets, and then he got extremely hot. And I know there were a couple of missed extra points in there, but to say in year one that you already had a chance to play to go to the Super Bowl, you participated in a league championship game in your first year, and as a kicker, he's having a chance to score every game. Not every position on the field has the luxury of saying, I get a chance to score points for my team every single game. I think that if he continues on the upward trajectory, he's going to be a Pro Bowler like Younghoe Koo is from the Falcons in the NFC this year. And I know that that's not actually going to happen. They're going to play a video game version of it. It's going to be more virtual instead of it actually taking place on the field. But you can't tell me that Bass isn't going to become one of the best kickers in the league if he doesn't continue on the track that he's on.
One other news coming out of Georgia Southern football this past week, Ryan Langan was named to the Senior Bowl, so he'll be heading down to Mobile in the next couple of weeks to...
We should have just stayed. I don't know. What, we came back. Oh, Coastal. Okay, we got a series. That's right.
Yeah, there it is.
I'm sorry.
You got to keep on keeping on.
And they'll be down there on Saturday. The game now at Hancock Whitney Stadium, brand new on-campus facility. Didn't get a chance to tour that. It's on campus. Mitchell Center is a little bit towards the northeast. The football is on the southwest, but we will have a chance to go there in 21 for football.
And the Senior Bowl almost means a little bit more this year, not to make it sound like the SEC or anything, but with the way everything's trending as far as the NFL draft and combines and all of that are concerned, the Senior Bowl may be one of the few opportunities for people to get in front of actual NFL coaches and executives this year to talk and actually have a face-to-face conversation. Yeah. I know that's kind of going by the wayside this year, but I still think a lot of people in the NFL put a lot of stock in getting a feel for somebody. And you can say it's the same on Zoom. No, it's not. You can't get a feel for somebody like you can when you're sitting 6 feet away from them.
You can also say this may be one of the few times that talking in person with a long snapper would be as meaningful as it is.
True.
Look, it's the most overlooked position on the field. Like some people say kicker, no, but you know who the kickers are, especially when they miss. You don't know who the long snapper is unless they recover a fumble or they have a bad snap, which Langan never did in 4 years here. But I almost think of it as an extension of the amount of parity that we saw in college football this year, but the first application of no in-person recruiting that's going to extend through the summer. Teams are leveling out somewhat. I mean, guys you've had contact with before can still come, but for guys that you're trying to develop relationships with, it's all Zoom, it's all technology, you're not shaking their hand until you get them on campus. And now you can get at least enough with them face-to-face. You're not going to get very long with them, but in this instance, guys that maybe didn't get enough before at least got the invite, but maybe somebody that was second, third tier can push themselves into day one or day two of the draft.
It's so weird to think that when everything as far as the shutdown started, that one of the last things, if not the last thing, around Georgia Southern Athletics was the pro day last year.
Yeah.
I remember it was the Friday or Saturday after everything got shut down that Thursday. We were expecting to be at J.I. Clement Stadium talking about Georgia Southern and Troy. You were going to be on your way down to New Orleans for the conference tournament with men's basketball.
Yeah.
But then we're kind of figuring out what to do, and I think Aaron and I talked about it while we were watching Tyler Bass kick in front of the Buffalo Bills scout, that we just kind of wandered over here to have something to do.
We were a little bit taken aback that Pro Day was still going to happen, because this was while everything was getting called off.
Yeah.
Leagues, professional teams, everything was getting shut down. Scouts were already making their way through. I think somewhere 10, a dozen-ish teams were still en route here, so they still came here. And that's when the Bills fell in love with Tyler Bass.
Yeah.
And we had an inkling that on draft day, if it got to a point, 5, 6, 7 maybe, that if they could, they would take him. I think it's funny that they took him after Jake Fromm, and they also Rodrigo Blankenship didn't go until after him, which I think is hilarious. Georgia Southern, whatever. But that relationship possible because it actually happened. Yeah. Bass has the best scoring season in Bills history, goes to an AFC title game, kicks two 50-yarders at a place where a 50-yarder had never been kicked, Arrowhead Stadium, had never been done in the playoffs before. That's unreal.
It's crazy to think about it, too, and I hadn't really thought of it in those terms until you just brought it up. If we don't have our pro day, is Tyler Bass a Buffalo Bill? Does Buffalo have the season that they did? I'm not saying that Tyler Bass made their season by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah, Josh Allen.
Yeah, Josh Allen might have something to say about that.
He's pretty good.
But do they have the same season?
Does he even get picked?
Does he get picked? Is he kicking in the NFL right now? It's crazy to think about, but
does Kendall go where he goes to the Bears?
Right. It's so crazy to think that something that seemed so minuscule at the time can prove to be such a big thing in somebody's career.
And Kendall ends up having 7 tackles in the playoff game against the Saints in a season high. Getting a chance to show out on the national stage, which they had a chance to do here at Georgia Southern, each for 4 years. It's awesome. It's awesome.
Crazy to think about what the last year has been. But getting back to Georgia Southern basketball, women's basketball, inside Hanner Fieldhouse this past weekend to take on South Alabama. It was a tough one on Friday night. Fell 59-58. The Eagles led by 6 with 2.5 to play. South Alabama would take a 57-55 lead with 17 seconds left. And Deja Holmes then goes down with 9 seconds left, hits one of the most confident threes I've ever seen in my life to put Georgia Southern up 58-57. Maurice Moses got a great shot of it because he was in the right place, right time, like Mo always is. South Alabama would be able to get the ball in the paint to Antoinette Lewis for a layup with 6 seconds left to put the Jags up by 1. And then the last play of the game, Deja Holmes is driving left side of the lane, going up for what she thought was going to be a layup. Antoinette Lewis comes over, bumps her, blocks the shot. Should there have been a foul? Should there not have been a foul? That can be debated until you're blue in the face. The whistle doesn't come out. But I think the thing that I take away from that one as much, and Ronisha Smith and I talked about it in postgame, Deja finished with a career-high 18 points as a freshman, and as a freshman to be as confident as she was to take that three from the right wing with 9 seconds left, which could have possibly won Georgia Southern the game, and then to see the look on her face afterwards, as you could tell that the fact that she wasn't able to make the final shot really tore her up. And Coach Howard, I think, said it best in the postgame interview that that's not going to be the last shot of that nature, of that caliber, that Deja's going to take.
No.
And next time, I guarantee you, because seeing her in the gym the last couple of days, she's been working on that last second shot that she missed. And so seeing her face after the game, after she missed that shot, after it was blocked by Antoinette Lewis, that may turn out to be one of the bigger milestones in her career, which sounds weird to say that a missed shot is a big milestone, but I, especially for a freshman, I think that could be.
I will go back to a men's basketball, very similar situation, New Year's Eve 2017, Georgia Southern at South Alabama, taking on the Jaguars. Quan Jackson, left corner, has a chance for a buzzer-beating three, hits the rim, Eagles lose, turn it over to the new year. Very next year, at home against ULM, almost the exact same shot, different venue, but almost the exact same shot. Tukey Brown the pass, Quan the three, bucket, game winner. Was he thinking about that? Probably not. Maybe he was, but probably not. But I remember talking about that with former head coach Mark Byington on the Ford locker room wrap-up that night, and even he thought, well, all the work that he had put in since that miss to lead up to that make, you may not be thinking about that exact moment when everything else is swirling around, but after the fact, it's, this is where I was. This is where I am because of what I did in between.
Deja, again, a career-high 18 points on Friday. She would all but replicate that on Saturday as Georgia Southern picks up a 68-56 victory over South Alabama to split the weekend. Deja finishes with 11 points. Fellow freshman Simone James with 11 points as well. But the big part of the game was the third quarter. Georgia Southern outscores South Alabama 22-4 in the third, finished the final 8.5 minutes of the third quarter on a 20-2 run, scoring the last 7 points of the quarter. But South Alabama, again, chips back, scores the first 7 points of the fourth quarter, and they would cut it as close to 3 with about 5 minutes left to go in the ball game. But Georgia Southern able to keep the Jags at an arm's length. It, at some point, was a short arm, but it was still an arm's length. Sarah Moore had a heck of a weekend, though. Finished with 9.6 rebounds on Saturday, 8 more rebounds on Friday night, and a big part of holding Antoinette Lewis, the preseason player of the year. We've talked about her time and time again the last couple of years. Held her to single digits in back-to-back games for the first time this year.
You guys have figured out a way to stop Antoinette Lewis that the rest of the league may need to take notice of. I know part of it's been foul trouble, which credit to you as well, but to do that against someone that came in averaging, what, 17 a game, yeah, close to that in her career, preseason player of the year, there's something to it. It's not an accident when you do it 4 times.
Yeah. I mean, she had, in the second game down in Mobile, went off for 15 points, but even that was, a lot of it was late when the game was already decided. But first game finished with 4 points. Then the last 2 days finished with a combined 8 points. And just a great job down low on the post by Georgia Southern, and especially Sarah Moore, who had back-to-back days of season high in minutes.
Look, Sarah's been here for a while. She knows how it goes. She was with the Kipped Around staff, now in year two with Coach Howard. Sometimes you need to prove it to yourself that you can do it. You may not always get a whole lot of time on the court to do it, but if the situation presents itself and you can have an impact, show yourself, show everybody else that there's a reason why I was brought here in the first place.
I told Sarah, whenever she gets a double-double, she's getting on the radio, and she's not real thrilled about that. She's been on the radio once in her career, and she was not happy.
Did she initiate this, or did...
No, I mean, she had a great game. She had a double-double. I can't remember who it was against a couple of years ago.
Okay.
But had her on for post-game because she was the quote-unquote player of the game. But she does not like talking on the radio.
What if it was on Facebook Live?
I don't think it would matter.
Okay. Because sometimes you throw the element of the video and then there's, hi, everybody.
Yeah, I don't think that one would matter. But nonetheless, it was a 68-56 victory for Georgia Southern over South Alabama on Saturday. Face off against Coastal Carolina inside the HTC Center. 6 o'clock tip-off on Friday, 2 o'clock tip-off on Saturday. Now for Georgia Southern men's basketball that comes out of the weekend 10-7 overall, 4-4 in conference play. It was a heck of a game on Friday night, an overtime winner, 84-75. 4 Eagles finish in double figures, Getty with 18, Caden Archie finishes with 17, Scooty and Cam Bryant finish with 15 and 13 respectively. But I think the biggest thing, you saw the depth in the legs for Georgia Southern coming to play in overtime as they outscored South Alabama 13-4 in the free period.
And that was after blowing a 15-point lead with under 6 left in regulation. I felt like it could have been a runaway, but it has become an unfortunate theme where this team has shown it can build leads, but the whole closeout portion when the curtain comes down, can you make it comfortable enough where you can just run into the locker room, or is it one of those where you're wiping off your forehead that you escaped? This was one where they escaped, but it was just a total shift from the final 6 minutes of regulation to overtime. South Alabama didn't even belong on a court with that team in overtime. Georgia Southern crushed them in the final 5 minutes, held them to 1 of 8 from the field. Eagles made all 4 of their free throws. They took better shots. Caden Archie's putback dunk on the baseline was a sight to behold. While at the same time, South was taking bad shots. You could tell they were winded. They only play 7 guys. Credit to them, though, the next afternoon, they changed up their mentality a little bit. Look, Michael Flowers, I'm happy that I don't see him anymore this year. He's an unreal offensive player. He had 32 points in game one. He had to take 29 shots to do it.
Holy cow.
That was the second most field goal attempts in Jaguar school history. Took 17 threes. Look, he made 5. Great, he made 5 threes. Took 17 threes.
Good grief.
So what they did in game two, and it turned out that this was the thing to do, he was running the offense. He wasn't looking for a shot. He didn't make a basket until there were 9:18 in the first half. And he only scored 10 points, but he had 10 rebounds. So he impacted the game in other ways, like Tukey Brown did for so many years. Even when Tukey wasn't scoring 18, he was going to dish out. He was going to grab rebounds. He was going to have steals. That's the mark of a truly great player. How can you make your mark when you may not be the player that everyone thinks that you are? But then Tyreek Liqueur, he scores 19 points. You have 11 rebounds from Kyle Gonzalez. Georgia Southern's defense was very good. South shot worse in game two than they did in game one. But it didn't matter what Georgia Southern did offensively. They couldn't make a shot. And it wasn't that South Alabama's defense was otherworldly. They didn't do a whole lot differently. Had some decent looks. They just didn't make them. It was very Davidson-esque. You were there with me that night. It was very Florida Gulf Coast-y, where whatever you do, I don't know if that's an adjective, but whatever.
So you just made a school name an adjective.
Whatever was tried, it did not work. It was either the ball was too big or the basket was too small. And that's facts. It sucks, but that's facts sometimes. And the impact that it has, look, as good as game one was, I think your feelings about the weekend have so much more to do with how it ends. Because for those guys, they shot under 30%, and then they had to think about it for 7 hours home. Even though they just picked up an overtime win over a team and at a place where Georgia Southern has been awful since joining the Sun Belt. Cannot buy one in the Mitchell Center. The second game seems to trump whatever happens in game one. Now, if it had been a win, best bus ride home ever. Because Georgia Southern never won back-to-back games at the Mitchell Center. But losing the second game and not having any kind of offensive rhythm, while South Alabama wasn't great, but they made enough shots and capitalized when the Eagles shot themselves in the foot, that made the weekend almost seem like Friday didn't happen. It shouldn't be that way, but it is. That's the last moment. That's what you take with you.
It was a 62-48 final from the Mitchell Center. South would get the victory over Georgia Southern on Saturday in the fourth game of the season between the two.
And now Coastal four of the next 10. We'll get there in a minute.
Four games, and I didn't realize how odd. We talked about it a little bit last week, how three sometimes you can see with a postseason game, but four is almost unheard of until this COVID year. Women's basketball hadn't done it since 1979, 1980. But for Georgia Southern men, you were telling me it had been a minute.
1934 against Douglas Junior College, now South Georgia State.
Wow.
That came up on Inside Georgia Southern Basketball the Monday before, and we had talked with Coach Berg Saturday morning, and regardless of how the game went, that team made history by playing somebody four times in the same season. In this instance, it was four times in a span of 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Now, we're about to do that with Coastal because it's going to be four meetings in the next eight games over the next month, but that's the schedule this year. It doesn't matter who you're playing. It's the fact that you're playing. And that's a year that's seen Georgia Southern play 17 games so far. There's only two other teams in the league that have played that many, South and App State. And just so happens that four of the games with the Jaguars or four of the games at South Alabama has also played. It's so wild to think that the season has gone the way it has. And it's probably good that once you get to the tournament, whoever you play in that first game, unless you get a bye, it's going to be somebody from the other league. So you can't wait to see somebody that you haven't seen because it'll be something different. It'll be something new.
It's almost like at the beginning of the season where you talk about either for football, you're looking to hit somebody in a different color jersey. For basketball, you're looking to match up against somebody in a different jersey.
In a way, it's felt like South Alabama has been part of Georgia Southern's team.
Yeah, it's their practice squad.
But they got two. Georgia Southern got two. It's about how I thought it would go. And that's about how I think everybody believes that most of these are going to go, even though the West has had more sweeps than the East has. But if you look at what this weekend could mean for Georgia Southern, Coastal, as we'll talk about in our final segment, they're in second. Georgia Southern is two games out of first and a game and a half out of that second spot, which would be a bye. Remember, top two in each division get the bye. And when you've got four chances over the next month against a team that's ahead of you, these become increasingly important.
We'll dive into Georgia Southern and Coastal Carolina in our final segment of this week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation. But for now, we step aside for some Eagle Tales with Roger Inman.
Time now for Eagle Tales with Danny Reed and Roger Inman.
Roger, you talked about travel before during the 80s championship runs, hopping different planes to get out to Tacoma and get out to Pocatello. But the travel in other ways to get about the playoffs during the 1AA days seemed like things were a lot different back then.
Played Montana that year up there. Yeah, we had some unique road trips. We also went to Delaware that year. People don't realize when you get into 1AA stuff, FCS, and it was a long time before they increased the travel party from 60. Finally, the latter years, we upped it to 125, and then you had a chance to survive financially in it. But it was tough making a lot of those road trips economical when you had to NCAA pay for your plane as part of the charting process, but then you had to reimburse them at the current airfare rate for everybody in excess of the travel party that was officially there. If you had a plane that held 180, anybody over 125, you had to reimburse the NCAA for the regular fare rate between Savannah and Philly in that case, or Savannah and Wilmington, Delaware, whatever the airfare would be. You had to reimburse them back in those days so that they potentially wouldn't lose as much money, but we were already losing enough already in the earlier days.
Thanks a lot, Roger. Now let's go to Colin Lacey with this week's Beyond the Bio.
Time now for Beyond the Bio with Colin Lacey.
Getting fired back up with another edition of Inside Eagle Nation. In this week's Beyond the Bio, we step into the marketing office with the graduate assistant in Brad Reynolds. Brad, appreciate you joining us.
Hey, Colin, how are you?
When you look at what you've done here at Georgia Southern, you've seen the marketing department from a couple of different roles as a student assistant, graduate assistant, in a couple of different places. What's been the biggest thing that you've really taken from your experiences here in the marketing department?
It's honestly just growing. I came from Augusta University. I didn't really know about this industry, about the back end of sports, you know, what goes into hosting an event, running an event, and everything that goes along with it. Just coming from Augusta University, you know, it was a smaller department, and finally learn about the sports industry as a whole and just seeing myself grow and just continue to learn about this community, about the department, and how I can improve myself and how I can help throughout the athletic department.
When did you decide that being in sports, working in sports, is something that you wanted to do?
I've always wanted to work in sports. You know, I'm not very tall, very fast, so I knew the athletic side of it wasn't going to happen. But once I learned about the industry inside of sports behind the actual events that go on, I was like, wow, this is for me. You know, I can continue to watch these sports and just continue to enjoy it and have fun while working. And so that's why I've really enjoyed being on the marketing side. I can, you know, go watch a game and still work at the same time. And I think that's what we all strive for in our jobs, is, you know, something that we enjoy doing. And I've really found that as a blessing.
One of the things, and Aaron Soka and I talk about it a lot, of what you have done in your time here at Georgia Southern, you kind of went to the higher ups and went to Dan and said, I want to take over softball and kind of make it my baby. Mm-hmm. Why was that something so important for you?
I just want to, you know, show that some initiative, honestly. And, you know, I'm always trying to push myself and make myself the best person I can every day. Coach John Wooden always says, you know, strive to be the best person that you do every day. I'm quoting this and it's not exact, but he's pretty much just saying, like, be the best person you can every day. Do whatever you're doing, be the best at it. And so, you know, just going up to the higher ups and being like, hey, this is what I want to do and I want to take control of it. That's just who I am. You know, I always want to push and grow and be better at whatever I'm doing every day. And I love the sport, I love the team, so I've really enjoyed it over these last few years.
Over the last couple of years, what are you kind of most proud of, being able to take a step back and look at what you've done with softball and the marketing of it?
Really creating a bond with the team. You know, I think that's the most important thing, especially in my position. It's about the student athletes and just like getting to know like the coaches, the players, and just having that relationship. I'm really relationship driven, and so I think just having that relationship, open line of communication, has been really important to me. And I'm really happy that I could have those relationships with the coaches.
A lot of people may see a marketing department from the outside looking in and see it just as a show up on game day, run music, set up a PA announcer, and then that's the extent of it. But when it's done right, it's a lot more than that on the day-to-day, getting ready for a game. Take us into the what your day-to-day kind of looks like getting ready for a softball weekend series.
Yeah, so usually I'll get there about 3 hours before first pitch. Team usually warms up about 2 hours, and so I'm setting up, making sure testing everything, making sure the video board's good, making sure PA sounds good, making sure music sounds good, sending out time sheets, making sure we're staying on time for ESPN purposes on for our TV providers, and so and making sure that we're setting up for our promotions, whatever we got going on, and just making sure that everything is going to go smoothly. There's not going to be any issues. That's pretty much what I'm supposed to do on a game day.
One of the things that talking with people around the sports industry you hear a lot of are kind of the horror stories. What's something that, and it happens everywhere, of something happens that's outside of your control that just kind of sets everything off in a tailspin? What are some of your horror stories?
Yeah, those are pretty scary, honestly. Like, you have a borderline heart attack every time. I think this past season, we got the new light system in at softball, and you just see, I can't remember who was running in. I want to say it was Olivia Creamer, but she's coming in from third base, and she's about to slide into home, and all you see is the lights go out. I'm like, I turn around, I'm like, what did I do? I'm literally just sitting here. What is going on? Luckily, it wasn't me. It was just the timing system was on auto, and so luckily Ray and Jeremy figured that out and got that going. But that, my heart dropped that day, honestly. I was so scared. I was, you know, we had Lisa Sweeney up there at the time, the deputy AD, and I was like, wow, I really just did this in front of Lisa. So that was really scary, but luckily we got it figured out. But that's one of those horror stories I always remember.
Another thing you hear around the sports industry is nobody makes it to where they are, especially at this level at Division I, without having a lot of people in their corner and a lot of mentors in their life. Who are some of those people for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think I just want to start off and say my wife. You know, she's been super supportive, just understanding, like, my schedule and just being flexible with it and just understanding. And she has been very supportive of what I'm trying to do right now. And then right, my boss, Dan Adams, you know, he's kind of taking me under his wing. He's been very helpful, and like I said, I'm very new to this industry still, and he's kind of helped, like, guide me and help be a mentor and just help me out through all that. And then just, you know, just help working with SIDs and everything, just having them just provide me some type of guidance. You know, Aaron, Chad, Brian Johnson, they just help make sure that I'm staying on top of what I need to do. But yeah, Dan and Cameron have been super helpful with my progress in this industry.
Now, you mentioned your wife. I guess you can still use the term newlywed.
Yeah, I guess
been
so.
Married within the past year, but what's that been like, kind of taking the next step in both your professional life and your personal life?
Yeah, no, that's it was super exciting. It was definitely weird with COVID, getting married during COVID. But, you know, like I said, she's super supportive in just whatever I do. And she's like, you know, I'll follow you wherever. And, you know, we always tell each other we're each other's number ones. So it's been definitely a transition. So, but it's an exciting one.
Finally, before we let you go, this segment's called Beyond the Bio. Give us something that people seeing you on a game day may not know, something beyond your bio.
Before I started in the sports industry, well, I started in the sports industry a while ago, but I was actually a coach at a local high school in Augusta. I was a head coach because the technical head coach had no experience and he didn't understand wrestling, but so I kind of took over that, and we took our team to state twice and had a couple individuals go to state. So, you know, it was like the first time in program history, so it was something really exciting and something I always cherish. It was always great memories, you know, riding on those long bus rides with the team and just, but it was always an exciting time for me.
So did you wrestle growing up and in high school?
Yeah, I did. I was actually on a national team in Virginia, and then I came to Augusta, and they didn't really have any programs, and then I picked it back up in high school. So wrestling's always been a big part of my life, and I guess just who I am today.
Brad, appreciate the time. Appreciate everything that you do for Georgia Southern Athletics, and we'll talk soon.
Awesome. Appreciate it, man.
Once again, that's Brad Reynolds from Georgia Southern Athletic Marketing. He's really taken over softball and run with it like we talked about in the interview. Does a great job down for head coach Kim Dean and company. But this weekend, it's Georgia Southern and Coastal Carolina. Georgia Southern women's basketball will be heading to the HTC Center in Conway, South Carolina. 6 o'clock the tip-off on Friday. 2 o'clock the tip-off on Saturday. And from all indications,
I know exactly where this is going.
I'm going to be calling the game from the penalty box. It almost feels like Wes McCauley just sent me off for 5 minutes for fighting.
See, I was either thinking that or you've got your oat isolation booth like a quiz show.
Which quiz show am I on?
24.
Okay.
when you're talking, nobody can hear anything. You got, well, you already have headphones on, so you can't hear anything.
I'm just hoping that the plexiglass in front of me doesn't fog up when I'm talking.
Well, then it would be like your glasses when you got to wear a mask.
Correct.
Which has got to be very annoying.
Yeah, it is. But from the pictures that have been sent by JT Crabtree and Barry McKnight, it is half a table and almost feels like you're a middle schooler taking a test when your teacher had those cardboard boxes yeah. that you had to put up between yourselves.
Yeah, except this time the teacher isn't able to look directly in and see what you're doing in that little cubby hole. Now it is actually a cubby.
Yeah.
Where is it? It was Minnesota football a couple years ago.
We had our own little cubby.
Where they had cubbies in the booth.
And we used one of them.
Oh, that was funny. I'd forgotten about that.
I had to.
I wish the game would have gone better.
Yeah, I do too. Women's basketball comes in 7-8 overall, 3-5 in conference play after splitting with South Alabama this past weekend. Coastal Carolina, it has not gone the way for the Chanticleers this year. They're 3-7 overall, 0-6 in Sun Belt play, have lost their last six games. And a big part of it, yes, they have had opt-outs. Had three different players opt out for Coastal Carolina before the season. You had the graduation of DJ Williams from the program. She's now playing professionally over in Italy. She was pretty much what the offense was for Coastal Carolina, and I don't know that you realized it until she was gone. But because of DJ Williams and all of the opt-outs and other graduations that you had from a year ago, 70% of the scoring from last year is no longer on that roster.
So they haven't figured out how to turn off the fire alarm, apparently.
No, I think they would welcome the fire alarm at this point.
See, we thought that they did a few years ago when we were sitting there with about 8 seconds left in a one possession game.
Yeah. Yeah, and then the fire alarm went off for 20 minutes.
Well, then the automated voice said, you have to leave the building, and nobody went anywhere.
Yeah, nobody went anywhere. Enoch Davis and I were looking at each other like, we got a 50-50 shot on this one.
And guess what, folks? The equipment doesn't stretch outside. I know you might think it does.
I don't have that long of a cord.
No.
But the Chanticleers really leaning on Asia Blount, 13 points a game, 7 rebounds a game, is really the offense for Coastal Carolina. You've got a couple of transfers in as Deja Richardson became eligible back in January. She transferred in middle of last year from Tennessee State and led Tennessee State and made threes a year ago, only playing half a year. And so being able to do what she does, sophomore out of Kennersville, North Carolina, she has kind of struggled in her first six games, only shooting about 23% from behind the arc. And you've had a couple of players that have only played in home games. And there's not a whole lot of explanation. It's all coach's decision is what has been put out. But Alana Denson is the biggest one that comes to mind. Has played six games but didn't play against Troy this past weekend. Didn't make the trip with the Chanticleers. Didn't make the trip 3 weeks ago when they went to South Alabama. And it's kind of tough to figure this team out because you don't really know which team is going to hit the floor because of injuries, opt-outs, what have you. But all indications look like they're going to have pretty much everybody suited up for when Georgia Southern rolls into town this weekend.
COVID has been the dominating factor of almost every conversation we've had in we're coming up on a year now. The shutdown was March 12th of 2020. We're coming up on very close to a year. I'm not going to sit here and act like I'm a Coastal women's basketball insider to tell you exactly what the deal has been up along the Waccamaw, but everybody's having to deal with this in their own way. Some have done very well with it. Others have not been able to play. And apparently this is another way that teams have had to deal with this, whether they're not traveling because of that, if there are other reasons. You don't know what is going on in that locker room. Record-wise, they haven't played as many games as everyone else. It has been obviously a struggle to get some tread in Sun Belt Conference play. But on Georgia Southern's side, they're not going to apologize for that.
No.
As much as you feel for that situation, because we've all had our troubles with this. But think back a couple weeks ago in the NFL when Washington was playing Philadelphia for a shot at the NFC East Championship. And the popular opinion was that Philly mailed it in. They sent their backup quarterback in late. It didn't look like they were trying to win that contest. And then a couple of days later, Doug Peterson, head coach, loses his job. Former quarterback at Northeast Louisiana, now ULM. Washington wasn't apologizing for any of that. And that didn't have anything to necessarily do with COVID-19, but they weren't apologizing. They were trying to play the game. They were trying to win the game and win a championship. In Georgia Southern's case, regardless of how poorly things are going somewhere, wherever they're going, that'd be the same if Coastal was coming to Hanner, which is what they're going to do toward the end of the regular season. This is pounce time. If the Eagles are going to make a run at a bye, this is pounce time.
For Georgia Southern men's basketball, they will have to deal with who just came out yesterday with the Sun Belt Conference reigning player of the week in Devontae Jones.
So you go from Michael Flowers, who was leading the league in scoring, to Devontae Jones, who is now leading the league in scoring because Flowers only had 10 on Saturday.
There you go.
Devontae Jones is really good. He's 6 feet tall. He has every shot in the arsenal. 3, mid-range, 1-foot runner. He passes extremely well. He can finish around the rim. Oh, by the way, he averages 7 rebounds a game. He's 6 feet tall, and he averages nearly 3.5 steals per game, which is second best in the country. I thought Michael Flowers was player of the year. Looking at some of the numbers a little bit more deeply, Devontae Jones is probably the player of the year in this league, and this is going to be the first of 4 meetings between these two in the next month.
So you're telling me that in 8 games that Georgia Southern plays in conference play this year, you're going to be seeing the two that are going to battle it out for player of the year.
At least for the people that I've seen. No idea how good the guys in the West are. All I can do is look at some of those numbers. I know that Louisiana's got a couple of guys that are doing really well. Theo Akwuba is a guy that's high up in rebounding and one of the national leaders in blocked shots. I know that Arlington plays about 47 guys. I know that Little Rock has Marquise Nolan, Root Monyong, two guys that are going to be in the running for player of the year regardless of how they're used in Darryl Walker's rotation. But for the guys that we've seen in the East, Flowers is going to end up scoring about 21, 22 a game. Devontae Jones just keeps getting better. He was 14 a game as a freshman. He was about 17 a game last year. Now he's up to 22 as a junior. He's already over 1,000 points. He's really, really important, though, to the point where if he's not where he is, they don't win. Look at last weekend against Troy. His first halves, he was virtually invisible. Now, he was the player of the week, keep in mind, but the first halves of those two games, invisible. Coastal was down by 14 points in each game. Second half of game one, he scores 24 points. He had 30 total. Win the game in a comeback. The second game, he had 16 points, 17 total. Coastal came back, won the game. Where they go is where he's going. And they're 11-3. So he's been going the right direction a lot more than he hasn't been. But they haven't played on the road. They've had 2 road games. And they haven't had a true road trip yet. They were supposed to go to Atlanta 2 weeks ago. Georgia State was still dealing with COVID. So they only played one of those games that Saturday up in Atlanta. Coastal should have won. They were up 5 points with a minute left. Devontae Jones had 2 turnovers. Georgia State scored the last 6 points. And they ended up winning the game by 3. To me, this is the most talented offensive team in the league. Not just the fact that they score 86 a game, but they can hurt you in a number of ways. And when they score, it's in bunches. They do it so quickly. It feels like you snap your fingers, they're in a 10-0 run. You can get them on defense, though. They want you to shoot a lot of jump shots. They want you to shoot a lot of threes. And as a product, you're going to make a lot of threes. That's how Cliff Ellis designs his defenses, whether it's the man or the zones or the triangle and two or whatever he throws at teams. But like Georgia Southern dealt with up in Conway last year, even though they made double-digit threes in the first half of that game, eventually the threes dry up. And think back to last weekend. That's what happened to the Eagles on Saturday against South. Georgia Southern was 14 of 26 from three on Friday, and they were 8 of 36 on Saturday. Eventually the well goes dry. But Georgia Southern has also beaten Coastal 4 straight times. So we'll see.
You know, listening to you talk about the West Side.
West Side. West Side.
We need to get Jay Walker on for a West Division recap each week.
You know, he was covering the women this past weekend.
Was he?
Well, they had to switch up because Louisiana had an extra road game. They actually played at Little Rock on Monday. And the individual that usually does the women for Louisiana, Ian Ozen, who's filled in for Jay doing baseball and men's basketball for a number of years, he couldn't make that trip. So Jay flipped with him. So Ian did the doubleheader that Louisiana had with the men against Arkansas State last weekend, and Jay traveled with the women's team, and he would have just gotten back after they played three games over a stretch of 4 days.
Huh.
So he may be more beneficial to you at this point than he would be talking about the men in the Western Division, but as we know with Jay, he has seen pretty much everything there is to see. He may have been there when Moses dropped the Ten Commandments.
He probably is the one that gave them to him. I still love all the messages that come through our text line on, especially the weekends when everybody's meeting up with each other, they're taking pictures, sending it to everybody else. And there's always a joke about Josh's hair.
Always at his suits.
Yeah, in his suit.
Because he's the only one I think is still wearing a suit. Because we've got, most teams have gone casual this year. Because usually the coaches are dressed to the nines, and typically we would go suits as well. But I think a lot of the media / broadcasters have sided with the coaches that it's much more comfortable, which much more reasonable. And we'll go back to normal in the 2021 season. But Josh sticking with the suits. I think we saw Jay wear a suit when they were at Arlington a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, it's really weird.
And he usually never wears a tie.
Yeah, the only time I've ever seen Jay wear a suit is when they were at the Cure Bowl.
A couple years ago, that's right.
That's it. But, yeah, we've got to – I feel like so disconnected from the Western Division.
The hope is that we'll be in Pensacola, if there is a Pensacola, long enough to see everybody. Now, how long we're going to be able to do that, I don't know, because each team has a different feeling about what the bubble should be. And
we need to get a mock Faye Dodo.
If you're going to do it, you got to do it. If you're going to do it, you got to do it.
Oh, for sure. No doubt.
There is no mock Faye Dodo. It's either all the way or not anything. But no snakes and...
Yeah, no, that snake lady can stay in New Orleans.
And I don't need the gator with the tape around its mouth either.
You know, that one I was fine with because all it could do is run at you. The snake lady, no.
The thing we
didn't get along.
The thing I worry about with the gator, there's always the off chance that somehow that tape is not as strong as it looks.
Oh, no, that tape pops loose. I'm going to be the first one out the door. You can bet your bottom dollar on that one. But... as long as the tape stays intact,
that's my
we're
worry,
good. Though. I've seen enough of the old Steve Irwin Crocodile Hunter show. Yeah, I'm good as long as the tape stays on there.
Pensacola will be something to look forward to anyway because the tournament is going to be happening concurrently with two sites being used for both men and women. All 24 teams at the moment are ticketed to go, and hopefully COVID will still allow the tournament number one to happen, and number two with everybody being able to go, because on the volleyball side in Foley, we know that Arkansas State was unable to participate because of COVID-19. It is something to look forward to, and it's something that we are about 6 weeks away from. Everybody has 10 games left in the regular season, 5 at home, 5 on the road. But what I will say for the Georgia Southern men, yeah, it's 5 home, 5 road, but after this homestand against Coastal, 5 of the next 6 are away from Hanner. That's going to be the season.
It starts this weekend as Georgia Southern men's basketball will be at home inside Hanner Fieldhouse against Coastal Carolina. 6 o'clock tip-off on Friday, 3 o'clock the tip-off on Saturday for Georgia Southern women. It's inside the HTC Center along the Grand Strand against Coastal Carolina. 6 o'clock on Friday, 3 on Saturday. For the voice of the Eagles, Danny Reed, this is Colin Lacey saying so long, everybody.
Been listening to Inside Eagle Nation, powered by Learfield, the official podcast of Georgia Southern Athletics.